Electric bicycles are my jam. I'm turning into a nut for a good e-bike. It's easy to get around, we save gas not driving our car for short trips to the store, and I'm getting a little extra exercise. The folks at Velotric are sponsoring a series of videos on my channel to show off some affordable e-bikes and help people get up to speed. It's easier than you think, and prices have never been more competitive. You can catch those videos on my YouTube channel, but if you're interested in shopping an e-bike, head over to velotric.bike/somegadgetguy and look at their road bikes and fat tires. Again, VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy. VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy. If any of those bikes look good to you, you can save an additional $60 off an already low price by using the coupon code SOMEGADGET60 at checkout. Once again, VELOTRIC.BIKE/somegadgetguy and coupon code SOMEGADGET60. And I thank Velotric for being a sponsor on this show. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. But the QA is the important part because we like to make this an interactive conversation about the news. Keep up with all those tasty tech topics. And also, give us some time to really sort out how we feel about what's going down in the land of tech. We make this a bit more of a conversation with folks that are in the live chat and people who are sort of following up on the show afterwards on social media. If you subscribe to the show on a podcast catcher, or some other method of hashtag replay crew, always appreciate the folks turning out. We've got an incredible group already jumping into this conversation and much appreciated. I hope everybody had a lovely weekend. Mine was a really busy working weekend just trying to catch up from being sick. You can still hear it on my voice. We're done with September. as is tradition on this stream, on this show, the last Monday of every month, we just kind of hang out. It's a bit more of a casual, I call it the pajama podcast, and I literally am wearing what I slept in. I just added the fancy hat from my buddy Andrew. One Mr. Fat Produce sent this my way. This is one of the geekiest baseball caps I've ever seen in my entire life, and I am wearing it with pride. If anyone knows what this baseball cap is in reference to and can maybe quote the episode title or the episode, at least the season episode number, I will be very geekily impressed with your nerdery as well. So, pajama podcasts, I don't have the same breakdown. I don't have the same structure. It's just once a month. I need to kind of let my hair down. I don't have any hair. I need to let my hair down and just kind of go with the flow, and we're going to go wherever the chat wants to take us. I have a couple topics that I think we can kind of kick things off with. We've been talking about the Pixel 8 leaks, leaks, as Google is probably putting out a lot of information to try and promote this phone launch they've got coming up. There was a recent another attempt at trying to shame Apple for not using RCS, which I'm pretty sure will backfire and just make iPhone owners feel superior for owning the iPhone. And we can also dig into, we talked about it a little bit on the show TK and I produce on Thursdays, the best of our week. We kind of dug into it a little bit, but the farther I get from that stream that I had with TK, the more frustrated I've become with Microsoft's Surface strategy. Apparently they're cutting back on funding for Surface. Panos Panay left Microsoft. He's sort of the figurehead of the hardware in the Surface division. And if you dig into the Surface laptop prices, they're starting to get really silly for things like RAM and storage upgrades. So we can cover all of it. I just want to do a quick round of shout outs here. I'm seeing Dave Burns, Twin Folk Tech, Barry, Flying Squirrel 625, Twin Folk Tech, Bryant Billing, Simon Says Hypno, Umar, Toner 50, Frank Gallo, I'm missing people, Ron Guido, Umar, Onscon, Mountain Dew Lou, ER1980, I said Barry Johnson, JMX Warrior, I probably skipped over someone in there just saying good morning. Hey, hi, hello. Hope everyone is doing well in the chat. JMX Warrior, I do love that iPager ad by Google. So is that where we want to start? Do we want to start with RCS? Simon says, Hypno, double the RAM, $400 extra, please. Microsoft is absolutely trying to pull an Apple. Let me say, one in the chat, if we want to start with RCS, I'm going to take a quick sip of coffee, and then we're gonna jump in, we're going to get to it. Oh, and Fat Produce is in the chat. Everyone tell him he has amazing nerd fashion sense, and thank you again for the hat. I say a few people who are following instructions, Twinfolk and Coppacash, do want to jump in and talk about RCS. JMX Warrior is giving us a thumbs up, but that wasn't the instructions. So we have a bunch of people averse to following directions. Twinfolk just said yes. He's like, that's not what the instructions were. I said, leave a one in the chat if you want to chat about RCS chat. Let me pull up a website. Let's just see what we do. Google Pager RCS. Google taunts RCS-less iPhone with iPager as the next step of the Get the Message campaign. So this is a funny commercial. I mean, we're all in agreement here, right? It's a well-produced commercial. Oh, I pulled up the website and I didn't even bother to put it on, do a screen share of it. And so we're all in agreement, right? Like, this was cute. It's kind of cheeky. It's taking a stab at one of the, you know, the main competitors. And I feel it's doing it in a really playful and kind of, I like it when advertisements can kind of be aware. And there are moments where you want to be able to call out the competition. And I feel like this ad is doing a really good job of getting into that. Just kind of talking through it here. I have to make sure not to like play a whole bunch of music and stuff. It starts out as like a classic reveal promo trailer. We see this like silhouetting, this like floating iPager. And it's supposed to evoke a lot of the boldness and a lot of the hype that always goes into like an Apple commercial or an Apple ad. And of course, it's just making jokes about how Apple iPhones, they fall back to SMS whenever you text any other product. And so the thing that I like highlighting here is we have this significant lack of consumer education when it comes to these kinds of tech products and tech services. And unfortunately, I don't know that there's any way to bridge that without, I don't know that there's any way to bridge that from people on my side of the industry right now. It seems like confidence in tech reviewers and tech commentators is at an all-time low, and we're not tastemakers. Like right now, the biggest YouTube channels don't drive the trend, they comment on what is already popular. So if something's already enormously popular, they like to make a bunch of videos about it so that they can make more money, because it sort of reaffirms and confirms the bias of an audience that's already following something that's really popular. And then the YouTube algorithm kind of drives that point home even further. But when I have these one-on-one encounters with like the parents at Lex's school, the parents of her playmates, I'll casually mention something like, oh yeah, blah, 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 and green bubbles, blue bubbles, it's all because Apple won't update their standards. Oh, I can't share a photo with you because you have an iPhone. They've never heard it phrased as if their product is the one that has the issue or has some kind of deficiency. So the only way it seems that you can reach a larger audience, the only way it seems that you can educate consumers is through advertising. If someone like Google is willing to put a couple $1 million behind an ad campaign, that's where people are most likely to get knowledge for new products and services. Not to toot my own horn too much. I kind of want to reference this back. Oh, I would be helpful if maybe I had prepped a few of these articles and these links. Doing it live like this, my internet connection is reaching out in multiple directions to try and figure out what's going on. So a couple weeks ago on the Patreon, I published this article, and I recently published it publicly on somegadgetguide.com, Folding Phone Durability, Educating Consumers and Setting Expectations. And I go through and I look at some of the commercials and some of the images, the advertising and marketing images for the some of the top folding mini tablets that turn into phones. And I feel most of them do a terrible job of showcasing what it's like to pick up a folding tablet and open it as I throw it on my desk and open it and use it and then safely close it and put it away. What is the context of that? We need to re-educate consumers on what a folding mini tablet, what that usage is supposed to resemble. And it doesn't matter how many videos I make, I might reach a couple hundred thousand people in a market where 1.2 billion phones are likely to be sold at retail, and even more phones are going to be sold direct, you know, from consumer to consumer, used devices and refurb devices, things that I don't believe are always counted in our main globally tracked stats. In fact, I would imagine that if we could track used phone sales, we're probably seeing a surge in that market too. So the iPager ad is helpful, because I think it highlights Apple consumers don't know when Apple is the one that's actually holding them back or is damaging part of that experience. But unfortunately, the more noise we seem to make on something like RCS, the more it just sort of seems to entrench the fact that iPhone owners would prefer to not have communication with Android owners. I mean, this is literally one of the main parental debates that's kind of happening at my daughter's school. They want to just easily set up some kind of text thread. Well, they just dump a bunch of comments and they dump a bunch of contacts into iMessage, and then they're good. And then they have to comment when there's a green bubble. They are compelled to point, oh, there's another Android in our group chat. So then groups of us will say, like, well, what about anything else? Why don't we move this over to WhatsApp? Why don't we move this over to Telegram, Signal, just anything that could. We could set up a Discord. We could set up a family Discord just so that people could do this. And we'd have some really great, robust video sharing and screen sharing. We could go on group calls. It'd be great. I suppose I could use something else other than my superior iMessage. And it's like such resistance. And it's just that entrenched, I like it better this way. It would just be easier if everybody else also had the iPhone. And I think when iPhone owners are confronted with the reality of what this market looks like, I think it actually emboldens them. I think they actually prefer that division and that separation. And I don't know any way of overcoming that. So this RCS campaign doesn't have any teeth until iPhone owners decide that they're not going to buy iPhones until it supports that feature. Apple's not going to change up any part of their business strategy until they see that they are losing money by not supporting an industry standard. The only other way that you can get Apple to look at interoperability is through EU regulation, because we know it's definitely not going to happen here in the United States. We are completely toothless when it comes to reining in big tech. I literally just stumbled. Apparently, there is a $2 trillion lawsuit happening with Google right now over extremely anti-competitive business practices. And Google went to the judge and said, we just don't want this to be public. Can you put our whole $2 trillion trial mostly behind closed doors? And the judge went, all right, because like it's not serving the public interest to know about a massive $2 trillion lawsuit for anti-competitive business practices against one of the world's largest advertising and search platforms. And Google went, yeah, but what if people just didn't know about this trial? And the judge went, you make a great point. And then it just happened. I had no idea that this trial was basically in full swing and that they were doing discovery and that they were doing a part of the actual deliberation and that like only tiny little parts of the trial were open to the public if you went and sat down. That's how broken the United States legal system is when it comes to big tech. Big tech says, oh, don't worry, we'll police ourselves. And then judges go, all right, that sounds fine. So there's no way Apple is going to be encouraged to use a actual standard, practical, current messaging system on the iPhone. It's going to have to come from the EU saying, make iMessage work or you can't sell it. And I feel like Apple needs to hit some more of those market corrections. If you can't make AirTag safe, then you should not be allowed to use Bluetooth. Either contribute to the Bluetooth special interest group so that the platform and the standard of Bluetooth is interoperable with all of these devices, or you've got to make everything all on your own. And that's fine. Apple can go and do, you know, UWB and make all of their products just so completely siloed. But you should not be able to use Bluetooth if you're going to actively make a product that has horrific ramifications for privacy and security. And then now Google's entire tracker network is on hold still. We were supposed to have Android trackers in the summer. It was announced in May that Pebble Bee, Chipolo, and Tile, I have one right here. I've been waiting to see if there's going to be updates on how all of these other trackers can operate on Android's network. We're waiting for Apple to update the iPhone, and boy, they're just really taking their time. They're just taking months to roll out some kind of patch for Bluetooth tracker updates. It's just so hard. It's just so hard to update iPhones. I guess we'll just have to sit on this for as long as we can, and then AirTags are still being sold, so I guess AirTags are the only trackers worth buying. Apple will just make all the money. And there is no regulatory agency looking into that. I have sent comments to the Attorney General of the state of California, and I've sent comments to the FTC. And if anyone has any other suggestions on other regulatory bodies that I could maybe reach out to and try and contact, because this is a horrifically anti-competitive business practice that Apple is just sitting on this, and we're all waiting for them to update the iPhone. And iOS 17 is out, and there's no mention of improved support for hidden tracker notifications. I would love to hear it. I've got letters written up. I've got some text that I can put together. I've got articles that I can link to for follow-up information. I'm thinking about reaching out to senators and members of the House of Representatives. Like, where do I need to go to say, hey, Apple needs some kind of oversight here because they're holding this entire industry hostage? But I digress. RCS. It's great. Twin Folk Tech, it's funny and I love it. However, the whole get the message campaign feels like constantly asking out a girl who told you she doesn't want to date you. Apple is not going to accept that invitation. I also have to hit a quick pause because we have to do a J-Man150 also hit his own resubbed again. So thank you for resubbing. And then also, gifted a tier one sub to KingTurtle2004. So first of all, hey, KingTurtle2004, thanks for jumping in there and catching the stream. And JMan150, you have been so generous, and I really appreciate all the support on this channel. Good morning, Marilyn. I'm glad to see you in the chat. And I appreciated your comment on that article that I posted on Patreon. Let me get through a few of these. Mountain Dew Lou, my dad had a pager when I was a kid, so I get the iPager meme. I just missed out on pagers. We could not afford that kind of advanced telecommunications accessory in my household. And we didn't really have any need or want for it. But I did jump on early to cell phones. Like when I graduated from high school, I was very aggressive in getting my own cell phone. So I kind of missed that sort of golden age of, you know, sort of by you had to pay by character, like the number of messages you could receive on it. And then I got this page. I've got to go and call someone from some other form of communication. Let me get this out of the way here. So let me get back to the chat. Dave Burns, my sister asks why all her friends with Android phones take better pictures. She has an iPhone 12 Pro. So, first of all, It could just be that all of her friends are better photographers. Oh, hey, I just noticed we're on a hype train on Twitter. JMan150 has basically completely juiced my Twitch metrics. But I also have to throw out some Fat Produce gifting tier one subs to Ron Guido and Gord's username. I have no idea how I'm supposed to say that. And Pakosin just asking me to take a second to hydrate here, so I'm gonna take another quick sip of coffee, but I'm gonna mute my mic so you don't hear the slur. ER1980, there are 1,200 members of the GSM Association, and it is their responsibility to actively promote push RCS as the default standard, especially in 2023, over the legacy SMS standard and educate the masses. So that helps frame, ER1980, you're completely correct. So that helps frame the massive educational hurdle that we're facing. Apple can put out one ad, one commercial about iMessage being encrypted and privacy, and it just works. And they have a marketing budget probably in the billions of dollars. The GSM Association then has to spend an inordinate amount of time correcting the information from the Apple ad, the oversights of the Apple ad, and the omissions from the Apple ad. And as we've seen, it takes significantly longer to properly explain the situation than it does to put out a pithy, "it just works" commercial. And then to deliver that information at scale means that you have to spend more than what Apple spent to try and get that message out there. And you're talking about an organization of 1,200 different companies that none of them have the same kind of image recognition, consumer recognition that Apple has. When Apple puts out a product at scale, when Apple puts out messaging at scale, they can do incredible harm to a market. They can do incredible damage to a company's reputation. And we see this actively at play right now. It doesn't matter if you go to them and say, hey, your messaging experience would be better. It would be safer if you would have encryption. You would have all of these extra features. You could still keep the green bubble so you know your friends are poor Android users, but your actual messaging experience would fundamentally be better if we were on this data protocol. And then iMessage already has the sort of pipes and the tubes to make sure that we could make this a more secure platform and a more secure messaging experience. And they don't care. They have to be taught to care. And that's not what Apple's marketing is going to do. Apple's marketing is going to say, you're a special little snowflake on a special little team, and all of those other people are just haters, and you need to stay with your own tribe. And so I don't feel we're going to move the needle on the old school, traditional, appropriate, conglomerate conversations that we used to have with these kinds of associations. Not until Apple is forced to either contribute or is forced to leave. I use the Bluetooth SIG as another example of this. The Bluetooth Special Interest Group is a huge conglomerate of massive corporations that all work together to say Bluetooth should be this. And they have dozens and dozens and dozens of these modules to say this is the definition of Bluetooth. When Bluetooth 5.3 comes out, there have been a bunch of chefs working in there, cooking up what they think each of the individual pieces of Bluetooth should represent. And so Apple gets to benefit from all of that work. But when Apple wants to make a product that is significantly, aggressively tracking location, they did not contribute to the Bluetooth Special Interest Group. So I believe the Bluetooth SIG should say, you are no longer allowed to use Bluetooth in your products until you contribute and you add to the standard and you help secure what you broke. Right now, Google has actually done more of the work in securing what Apple broke. So I'm using analogous situations. It's always dangerous because, you know, what's going on with Bluetooth is not the same as what's going on with RCS, but it just speaks to the current corporate culture of Apple right now, that they have an enormous sway over this market. They have some of the most aggressive consumer lock-in available. They have a fan base that is perfectly happy to sort of look the other way at any other technological advance and then wait for Apple to do it, and then they believe that Apple invented it. I mean, it's such an Orwellian situation when it comes to that kind of psychology and marketing. So, yeah. So, Michael Corcoran, I mean, I get it, but I don't know of a better solution. Michael Corcoran saying it's frustrating that sites like Android Authority are doing Apple's bidding with articles like Google, stop criticizing Apple's messaging, it makes you look desperate. I feel like the sentiment of that is accurate, though, because it's kind of the same thing that I'm saying here. The iMessage, the iPager commercial is funny. It's fun. It's a quippy little take. It's fun for some back and forth, like sports team kind of rivalry exchanges. But when we look at the strategies that we're hoping will move the needle on this consumer conversation, if we're talking about the market is not going to encourage Apple to do anything until Apple fans stop buying iPhones. And the more Google presses this messaging, the more I feel those Apple fans are going to throw up their shields, double down on buying Apple gear, and they're actually going to start evangelizing to their circles of family and friends that they should only use iPhones. We're actively seeing people comment to each other, person to person, and it seems like it's a totally acceptable thing in our society to call out someone if they have an Android phone. I wrote that article about it, my wife interacting with one of her friend's parents, and she actively is throwing like little thumbs down reactions and emojis because like her texting isn't as nice when my wife messages her on an Android phone. And she doesn't see anything wrong with that. She is compelled to comment on every green bubble she sees in a group thread. She makes no efforts to, you know, like share photos or videos in other platforms, because if it were just everyone were on iPhones, I could just share this video and it would be so much easier. And if you call her out on it, you're the one being confrontational. You're the one who's being problematic. So if you're the Android owner, you're just supposed to shrug and say, like, I like my phone. And you're constantly getting called out on it. But if you say, hey, you know, it's really the iPhone that's the problem. Why don't we move this over to WhatsApp? Well, why are you getting so aggressive? Oh my gosh. It's just texting. We're just trying to make everybody aware of what's happening in our daughter's school. Why do you have to be so angry all the time? You're one of those angry Android users, aren't you? And it drives you crazy. And I see why so many parents just scrub out and say, oh, screw it, I'll just get an iPhone. And that works to Apple's advantage. A massive part of Apple's current marketing strategy right now is predicated on bullying. I'd love to see someone like actually tag when Tim Cook went before Congress in that massive big tech investigation on collusive marketing behaviors, and you know, every one of these FANG at the time is Facebook, Apple, Microsoft wasn't there. It was Facebook, Apple, Google, and Amazon. And Tim Cook under oath said, oh, you know, bullying is not a part of our culture. And you got to call BS, because Apple bullies everyone in this space. They bully the components of smartwatch manufacturers because they can take their IP and not pay for it. Right now, the Apple Watch should not be allowed to be sold. It currently uses IP that an international commission said Apple stole that IP. But you know what? Now we're going to debate whether or not you can copyright and trademark health tech. Maybe you just shouldn't be allowed to trademark that. You can invest billions of dollars into a new technology, but if Apple wants it, maybe you just can't copyright it. Maybe you just can't trademark it. Apple bullies developers. The whole WordPress saga on the Apple App Store is a perfect example of Apple saying, we want money from something that we have nothing to do with just so that you can have access to iPhone and iPad users. And WordPress played by the rules, and Apple changed the rules so that they would have to pay Apple more money. Every part of this, green bubble, blue bubble, another perfect example of like, well, we're going to make this secure messaging platform. Oh, if you have concerns, just buy your mom an iPhone. Yeah. Every part of that is bullying. I would love someone to say, like, Tim Cook, you kind of lied under oath. Bullying is a massive part of your company's platform. So you perjured yourself. I would love to see someone float that. Just the headlines, that would be enough. Because I don't know that Tim Cook really has the same kind of like love or adoration. He's such an operations guy. I know people like point to me like, oh, he's kind of like a grandfatherly sort of individual. But the more you can kind of keep picking at some of that imaging, that messaging, I think I, it would be funny to see someone say like, no, you lied. you delivered false testimony to a Senate hearing. There should be some consequences for that. Go hire some lawyers. Oh, Onscon, I wish Apple used, so Onscon says, Apple fans basically plug their ears and go, la, 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 got it. I wish it were that simple. I wish they would just sort of leave other people alone. They are active in the conversation on what phones other people should use. It's not a just I'm ignoring what's happening around me. It's I am actively trying to change what other people use, and they need to own phones just so that my app has the right blue bubble colors on it. It's so much more insidious than just, I don't want to learn. It's, I'm actively spreading the gospel of blue bubbles.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Mmm, savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
See, Dave Burns, I mean, I kind of get it, but then it just causes even further disruption. Dave says, Android users just keep bothering people with iPhones with fun features we haven't like. And it, like I said, the second you bring up the differences, it is conflict. The emotional attachment to our gadgets is intense. And so few people are consuming tech content. So it really is the fashion side and the marketing side that inform most of the opinions on this. And when we see like tech journalists, if someone is trying to seek out some mainstream commentary on these things, it's mostly companies that are beholden to Apple for clicks and views. So they're very careful not to rock the boat, and they don't want to scare away Apple or iPhone owners because they make more money on the content that's already popular, and then search promotes their content because it has the right keywords and it's super popular. And Dave knows all this because Dave knows more about marketing and advertising and internet traffic than I do. But the second you bring up some of those differences, it's an immediate defensive posture, and you are the one, if you start the conversation on that kind of stuff, you're the one that's engaging in aggressive commentary or calling people out, or you're, like I said, you're the angry Android owner. I don't mind a little bit of that conflict because I bring my receipts. Like every single time I'll pull up something, I'll hold up a Xiaomi, and no one knows what that is here in the United States. And then I'll say, like, well, I mean, yeah, the iPhones, actually, their picture quality has been kind of degrading over the last couple of years. Oh, I don't know, Apple's, and they take the best videos. And you're like, okay, our kids are playing soccer right now. We're halfway across this field. I have this Xiaomi, which is about the same price as your iPhone 14 Pro. Let's take a couple photos. And then it's, oh, but that's different, and oh, you're a great photographer. I'm just saying that, like, for regular people. And you're like, what regular people should be out there owning $1,200 phones? Oh, but that's different because, you know, I can pay and I'm a carrier, and that's... And it's hoop jumping and hoop jumping and hoop jumping, and eventually you just get to a point where they tap out and they just don't want to talk about it anymore. It's fine. You like what you like, and I like what I like. And you're like, I didn't start this. I pulled out a phone and you said, what was that? And I said, it's a Xiaomi with incredible Sony sensors and these Leica lenses. And then you took that as an affront to the iPhone. I just said, this is a phone, I really love the cameras on this phone. Well, you must be saying that it's better than the iPhone, and that can't possibly be true. Uh-uh. I was very specific in what I said. You took it and ran. And at least for, like, the closest friends that Lex has, the parents at least kind of know not to try and tag me on that, because it's the superpower we all have as techies. If you're really into this stuff and you're not just, you know, like, a label slob, if you're not just, I like Apple and Samsung because they make me more money on my YouTube videos, we have this incredible superpower. I have an amazing superpower. I can go into any conversation with any technology someone might be using, and I can make a choice. I can make that person feel amazing for what they bought, or I can make that person feel awful for what they've bought. I feel like I'm pretty polished and charismatic from having done some years in hosting and television and teleprompting and stuff like that too. But I can make a choice in that moment to say, these are all the amazing things that I love about what you're carrying. Could be an iPhone, could be a Samsung, could be a Motorola. I got it all on tap. My brain could be filled with useful information, but no, it's filled with, like, phone and tablet specs. So yeah, short story incredibly long. The iPager commercial is fun, but we're not having fun right now. The entire tech industry is ratcheted because of search algorithms and because of the monetization, and social media is on, it's a dumpster fire right now. But yeah, I don't feel like it's really going to move the needle on any of these chats. Let's just kind of pick out just a few more of these comments here from Abhishek. There was an Indian regulation on Apple as well for removing the lightning cable. I feel India is probably going to start soft playing Apple over the next couple years. I'm not trying to call out Indian regulators, but I feel one of the reasons why Apple has radically increased their operations and their manufacturing in India is because it will curry them some favor with the local regulators. See, we're playing ball in a few of these areas, and then we're going to dump $40 billion into your economy, and we're going to be manufacturing these iPhones here for preferential treatment in the distribution of tech products in your country. And I feel like some of those more, some of those days where the Indian regulators were a bit more aggressive towards Apple, I think we're going to start seeing them back off a little bit. Whenever a company promises to do anything basic here in the United States, the government rewards them with tons of tax breaks, taxpayer dollars, sweetheart deals, zoning deals. Look at TSMC. TSMC is looking at setting up manufacturing and fab here in the United States, and it's not going to be the most bleeding edge chip tech. It's not going to be finished here. Like, all of the packaging will still have to be done in other TSMC facilities. But, like, the United States government is flipping out. Like, oh, we're going to do this. They're going to set up an Arizona plant. We're going to give them billions of dollars. And you're like, they're going to take those billions of dollars. I don't know that it's really going to help the chip landscape or our economy very much. Yeah, Michael Corcoran, there's nothing crazier to me than people that think the iPhone is a status symbol when 90% of high school students have one. How exclusive could it possibly be? There are $75 at Straight Talk. It's more, Apple is benefiting from generations of marketing, generations of feel-good marketing. It's not Apple put out the iPhone and in 10 years... they've built this little sort of enclosed ecosystem. It's from the 1984 Super Bowl commercial. Apple has been spinning and relying on this generational marketing idea that if you're a fan of Apple, you're somehow one of these tiny demographics and you need to create this like insular bubble around yourself because you're one of the ones that gets it. You think different. It just works. Macs don't get viruses. What's a computer? Like, that's really Apple's greatest strength, is that their marketing is passed down generationally from parents to kids. And so now that you're getting into, yeah, all these kids have iPhones, it's seen as the victory. So the grown-ups feel like they're the ones being persecuted, but, you know, the next generation, they get it. 90% of people under the age of 20 have zero interest in an Android. They don't even know that Androids exist. And they're ostracizing their friends for not having the right phones. We did it. We thought different, and now our kids are going to benefit from it by having the Just Works products that don't get viruses. It doesn't matter that they have crazy, terrible 0 days. Again, make sure your iPhones and your friends' iPhones are updated. There was yet another 0 day discovered, actively exploited in the wild. We talked about one, was it last week or the week before? They're coming faster and faster and faster. One of them was an incredible WebKit exploit. Apple's browsers are some of the leakiest and the worst protected. Go get Firefox. I mean, like, I don't like what Google's doing with Chrome. I don't like Google's new ad profile. And there are some problematic aspects to Firefox's relationships with advertisers and marketing agencies too, but I have significantly better tools for managing what I can control on Firefox than I can on Chrome or Safari. So even when I feel like Safari's been buttoned up a little bit, another 0 day comes out and Apple will not disclose what the impact of that looked like. They will admit, we think that the 0 day was exploited. We do think that this was used in an actual attack out in the wild, but we have no idea, no clue. What was the extent of that damage? Who was hurt by it? What can you do to defend your, no, just update your iPhone. It just works. It barely does that. It doesn't do anything else. It just kind of works. ER1980, the CMA in the UK? You mean the agency that just rolled over for Activision? Yeah, it's, see, Twinfolk, and I feel like for Android users, we can get really lost in the weeds on the practical nuts and bolts. Like, I enjoy the conversation on individual components and RAM and flash drive speeds and SoC fabrication blows my mind these days. Twinfolk says, I can't consider owning an iPhone a status symbol flex when people just finance them through their carrier over 3 years, LMAO. I feel like those of us who are more inclined to be Android and Linux and Windows and SteamOS and variety fans are going to miss the point. Like I said before, the status isn't the same as a luxury car status. The status is we feel we are the minority and we're persecuted by the majority of Windows and Android users. And they can always move the goalposts. So even though, you know, the United States market is almost, what is it, 55-45 iPhone to Android in terms of new sales, They can always point to the global stats. Oh, you see, iPhones are only like 25% of the international smartphone traffic and smartphone sales. So we're a small percentage of the overall smartphone pie. Ignoring that, like, feature phones in India are actually one of the fastest growing segments, and, you know, that you're not debating oranges to oranges here. And if you were to talk about, like, premium tier sales, Apple probably would be closer to 50% of the market. So that's not what makes it the flex. It's the in-club versus out-club. It's the in-group versus out-group. And it's who can we ostracize and who can we sort of eliminate from our ranks. And those group threads, those group messages, those text threads, things like that, especially in North America, carry a ton of weight. Because unfortunately, if someone's already predisposed to kind of a bullying mindset, which Apple is courting pretty aggressively these days, it feels good cutting someone out and denying them access to a thread of communication with their peers. And we also know that teenagers can be hellish and vindictive and terrible to each other when it comes to that kind of in-group, out-group. All to Apple's benefit, all lining Apple's pockets, and that makes Apple even wealthier into another generation of tech consumers that are even a step more aggressive than the generation they'll replace. Gotta hit a quick pause here. J-Man150 again. Womp, 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 womp. Terrible no sound board of glory fanfare. Gifting a tier one sub to Skinny1P. What's up, Skinny1P? Thank you for dropping by. And J-Man, rocking my socks, bud. I really appreciate the support. That was very, very cool of you. Let me scroll down. I'm way behind on the chat here. Dave Burns. My sister is a competent photographer. Dave, if she can't take a good photo with an iPhone 12, then maybe she's not as competent as you think she is. I'm just saying. I think iPhone photos are terrible when it comes to a price performance camera examination with Apple's auto processing software. But if all of her Android friends are taking better photos than her, maybe she's not as good as you think she is. Send her that clip, because I'm obviously being facetious. Just like, you got called out on a podcast. Maybe you need to get good, Dave Burns' sister. See a Bionic Scoop right after. Give me a rock with a lens. I'll make magic. And I believe it. Scoop's photos are baller. And I want to highlight this because, like, we're being silly. I'm not calling people out, but I'm kind of calling people out. The major difference is just that extra step of intellectual curiosity to see what are the limits on this product. And the more you listen to tech journalists and the big, huge tech reviewer channels, the more they're just going to reinforce what people are already doing with them. Oh, no one's using all these manual modes. Well, then maybe talk about them. Maybe show what the differences are. Maybe highlight, you know, this is what you can do with a RAW file. This isn't beyond the pale. This isn't beyond the norm. Every single social media platform, every single music streaming service, every single cloud storage solution, everyone is trying to improve image quality, fidelity, streaming quality, visual resolution. This is not coming from the techies. You like Apple Music HD? Before Apple Music started streaming in CD quality, everyone in the tech sphere was just so content with MP3 quality streaming, and who even bothers with discs or those nerds with their FLAC files. They just reinforced the status quo. So where did that come from? Apple marketing needed something else to reach consumers who aren't listening to techies. And you know what? Higher fidelity audio helps sell services. Bootlicking tech reviewers were not on board higher fidelity audio. that came from consumers. Consumers spent money on services that gave them better quality. And all of this extends. The second I show someone, even something super basic. So one of the moms has an iPhone and she was trying to take a photo. And I just, you know what? Like, it's kind of bright. Just slide that. I didn't know you could do that. You have a $1,200 phone. But out loud, I said, oh yeah, just the little exposure slider. She had never grokked what that little line was, and darkening the photo just a little bit, enormously better photos, because the iPhone wasn't doing that BS, overexpose the image, jack up the ISO, try to make everything HDR bright so that nothing is really contrasty or nothing really stands out. Then you've got too much noise, so you've got to use a noise reduction filter that smears out all the detail, and then you over-sharpen the smeared photo for that weird splotchy oil painting look. But if you slide the exposure slider just a little darker, the photo pops and you've got some contrast and there are some shadows again. You're probably also taking the photo at a slightly faster shutter speed. Like, all of those things. So, what Scoop says, give me a rock with a lens and I'll make magic. You know, like, I love the experimentation of setting up a pinhole camera or working with time-lapse photography or shooting in slow motion. Or like, I like the exploration and the novelty of all these things that they bring. And then I'll see a mom with a $1,200 phone whose mind is blown that she can make the photo just a little bit darker. And you know what? That looked like a better photo. That's... So yeah, Dave, you should make fun of your sister. I'm way behind on this chat. People are talking about like Google servers and Google controls one aspect of RCS in that they have a platform of servers that carriers can use. But they don't have to use. If a carrier wants to set up their own RCS system, they totally can. RCS by itself is just a data communications protocol. It's up to the company or the organization implementing the server, operating the server to implement all of the features that go into RCS, and they can choose not to. A carrier can say, hey, we have RCS compatible phones and an RCS compatible service. It communicates with Google RCS, but we've not implemented end-to-end encryption. And that'll break Google's service for end-to-end encryption. So that is still a messy aspect of having the more open standard. But so far, every single time a major carrier has put up a stink about using Google service, it just delays the rollout of RCS. The carrier sees this is stupid expensive to implement and to control and to manage. And we've got a whole bunch of consumers who are pissed off that it doesn't work the way that we thought it would. Let's just give it back to Google. They did that with payments, you know, Tap and Pay, a Google Wallet. Oh no, we can't let Google take over all of this. We want to make ISIS. All the carriers gave us ISIS. We'll make our own payment. Oh wait, no, payments are hard? Oh, it's expensive. Nah, let's give it back to Google. And they spent 2 years fighting Google on that while Apple's payment system became the de facto standard. Every single time they put up that stink, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. And I can't blame Google on all the other messaging permutations because, like, they were facing constant obstruction from the carriers that would have to implement the protocols for Google servers to actually take that over. Google believed the carriers when the carrier said, no, we want to make a system that works between all of the carriers independently and we'll roll that out. And then 2 years later, they said, no, we changed our mind. So that's why we have, you know, from Hangouts to Allo to Google Messenger. I feel like, you know, Google shouldn't have played with different brands. Like, I think they should have just stuck with Hangouts. You call it Hangouts, you just change the architecture underneath. I feel like Google's problem was putting a new brand label to try and generate excitement. That's not what people want with messaging. They want consistency, and they want something that feels like it's stable. But it's Google, and Google loves novelty. So that's where we got all of these other BS situations. But anytime you see a techie like, oh, Google can never decide like on a messaging platform. They're so terrible. That's a bad faith hot take on a really complicated market of shenanigans that's gone down. And that's someone that I would very much just say, you don't really need to depend on them for any kind of informed tech commentary. You can kind of pass by what they might have to share. Oh, Muppinish. I didn't see any gifted subs, Muppinish. I'm sorry. I'm looking through. I see J-Man. Oh, I don't know. Hey, Muppinish, if you've also been throwing out some gift subs, because I only see J-Man and Fat Produce. So if Twitch borked on that, I'm really sorry about that. I apologize for Twitch's inability to properly highlight, but I will also give you a terrible no soundboard fanfare of glory for support on the stream. I'm really sorry. Yeah, I don't have anything in here on the Twitch about other gift subs. Oh, I've been scammed by Twitch before. Oh, Muppinish, I'm really sorry about that, but thank you. I appreciate the effort, even if Twitch is being lame. So I'm sorry about that. Let's see. ER1980, how much lobbying do you think Apple does to the carriers to hold back on RCS? That could be another way to look at it too. So I don't know. When it comes to lobbying efforts, we know Apple is aggressively interested in communications in Washington, D.C. That's how the whole Apple Watch shenanigans have gone down. International community says, hey, Apple ripped off this IP. And normally, that would be a situation where you would pull the product, the Apple Watch, from store shelves, or you would force a more aggressive payment. You know, you have to work with this company that you stole their IP to get this licensing deal done, or we're going to pull your product from store shelves. But we covered this a couple months back on the podcast, that as soon as those verdicts were coming down, Apple was aggressively lobbying across all of Washington, D.C. to try and get FaceTime with members of the Biden administration and people on select committees in government to try and do anything they could to prevent the fallout from this verdict coming down. And that's why we're now pretending that somehow it's different when Apple steals other companies' technology, when Apple steals IP. Well, it's not this, because Apple puts out this good, pretty product. And we wouldn't want that to, like, hurt capitalism. So we don't have a free and open market. If you're a $2 trillion company, you just go to the Biden administration and say, it'd be better if this didn't happen. So, yeah, it's pretty great. So we know that they put a lot of pressure on all of these companies. We know that they make these deals knowing that they'll get preferential treatment. And we know that they can use their economic leverage to harm competition pretty much whenever they see fit. Yes, Brent Billing. Bullies. way behind on the chat. So JGJ, I'm curious if dating apps downrank Android users. So again, if the dating app has any kind of algorithmic sorting system, then yeah, absolutely. Apple customers are more desirable. They will spend more money on your platform. Apple encourages that relationship because then they also get a cut from the dating app. Of course. Of course. And that also fills into these conversations. I was listening to a podcast, like these two girls that review movies, and I kind of turned off their podcast just because they went off on this extended rant about like, yeah, and I was hitting this guy up and he was really cute and we were hanging out at the bar and then he pulled out a Samsung and I was like, well, I guess just this isn't going to go anywhere. And it was just so, it was delivered just so off the cuff with her friend, her co-host going, yeah, I know, isn't that terrible? And like, yeah. So algorithmically, yes, if you're going into a dating app situation, software is going to work against you because of the perception of how individual users on that platform are monetized and the relationship between the developer and Apple. I feel like that's pretty clear. We see that on YouTube. Everything has to be framed through the context of Apple. Like, hold on, I've got to pull this up. I wrote the script. I still have not had the voice to complete the incredible amount of recording it would take to make this sort of video essay that I'm trying to make on how much the, here it is. I call it the Apple hype machine. So, hold on. You know what? Let me do this. I'm going to give you all a sneak peek. I wrote like 4,000 words on Apple glasses from the original video first tease of Google Glass back in 2012. There has been a cottage industry of hyping a supposed pair of Apple glasses that have never been detailed, disclosed, leaked from Apple. It's already back in full swing. There are already new rumors, even though Apple Vision Pro has finally been shown off. I mean, like a simpler heads-up display, but they make the boldest claims. Like, it's going to have a holographic UI, it's going to have hand tracking, it's going to have LiDAR, it's going to be less expensive than anything that has ever been put on your face before, but Apple's going to make it, because Apple always competes on price disruption since 2012. And according to these people that are also putting out these rumors about Apple glasses, Apple has had the patents and Apple has been doing the R&D since 2006. So 18 years of development on Apple glasses, and Apple has nothing to show for it. So hold on, let me see if I can do a proper just full screen share. This borked the last time I tried to do it here on the stream, but we're gonna give it another try. So if I share this and I open this, I'm actually gonna minimize the chat overlay for just a second. It's gonna reset our chat, but just as an example, this is going to be the background of the video that I'm going to use. So I'm going to pull up this video. Let me full screen it here. And this is me just scrolling on YouTube through all of the rumor videos that we've been getting for 11 years on a future sleek pair of Apple glasses. This video of me scrolling through search results. 2 years ago, Apple Glasses has arrived. Day in the life. Apple, huge Apple Glass leaks, $499, and there's Brian Tong. Whoa! That never happened. That was never a product. I'm blown away. This is a video of me scrolling through one set of search results. It is 9 minutes. 9 minutes of thumbnails of Apple glasses coming, Apple glasses $499, Facebook glasses versus Apple glasses, iGlass, Next AR glasses, everything you need to know, iGlasses, smart glasses from Apple. Apple glasses will replace the iPhone from 3 months ago. 3 months ago, that was the headline of that video. Apple Glass, everything is a touchscreen, and there's my buddy Jaime Rivera. AR glasses concept. We've been going for a minute. We have 8 more minutes to go. Let me just pause this. So we have to frame everything in the context of Apple. You are not allowed to have a product that defines a new segment without someone turning it into an Apple video. So here's someone using the Nreal Air glasses plugged into an iPad, I'm assuming, just to simulate some of what we saw as a tech demo from Apple Vision Pro. The title of the video, Apple AR Glasses Tech Preview. Apple doesn't make a product in this space. Apple doesn't ship anything to consumers in this space. they added these little parentheticals, the Nreal Air, as part of the title. But the main part of the title that will get them clicks on this is iOS with a big red arrow, someone wearing glasses, and Apple AR glasses tech preview. You can do another one, like say the Rokid. Well, you need to make it Apple focused. You put Rokid Air in the thumbnail. I'll at least give them credit that they kind of cut off the Rokid logo. They shoved it so far into the upper right-hand corner that it cuts off the very top of the Rokid logo. But now I just need Apple to make this Rokid Max AR glasses. Apple is ahead in the search, in the string. So you'll have people really interested in doing that. But, you know, Rokid Max. Well, it's not as important to actually credit the company that's delivering the product. You've got to make it an Apple-centric video, and you got to let Apple consumers know that that's what you're going to talk about, is how good Apple is. I just lost... Oh, I don't know if I got a screenshot of it. I'll have to see. Hold on, let me kind of minimize my screen share again. I'll bring the chat back. Give me one second. I need to see if I can find this one, because I also need to screenshot it. But it's another hilarious... Oh, so no, I've got two more here in terms of bad faith takes. These were recent. These were just a couple days ago. Hold on, let me read these headlines out here. Apple smart glasses on the way. New patent points to AR spectacles separate from Vision Pro. And then another one. Apple glasses may look to steal the digital crown from Apple Watch. And you're like, that was like literally a week ago. They're already back hyping up technology that we've been talking about for 12 years. Since the reveal of Google Glass, this has been the cottage industry, the cheap and easy way to get clicks and views and hype on a product that has kind of never really existed. And I'm not joking. I mean, like, these headlines, this was a video thumbnail from 6 months ago. Apple glasses, $499, with like these tiny sleek wireframes that would never exist for a pair of AR glasses, with like this little just Photoshopped imprint of apps on a glasses lens. Like, if you know anything about technology, you know this product is functionally impossible. This product cannot exist in the real world. That is not something that we are capable of making today. But you can mock up the Photoshop on something like that, and then you'll get another 100,000 views on a terrible pre-rendered CG look at what AR glasses might look like. I can't remember where I found that other article. I need to pull this up, because this is the last, like, of course, in framing the conversation around Apple, you've got to also make the competition sound completely inept, and you've got to make sure that Apple fans pat themselves on the back. Let me see. There are glasses.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, Adam Dowd here, host of the Benefit of a Doubt podcast. The what now? It's my brand new podcast, and it will be filled with the biggest news of the week, interviews with tech insiders, gadget reviews, featured stories, you name it, I'll do it. No, I mean literally, this is a new thing, so it can be anything we want it to be. So head on over to benefitofadoubt.com to subscribe. That's benefitofadoubt.com, spelled D-O-U-D, to find my written articles and to subscribe. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt.
Ah, here it is. It was from Phone Arena. All right, let me just do sort of my basic screen share. So this was from Phone Arena, September 8th. Current AR glasses literally make me hurl, but I'm a believer thanks to the Vision Pro. And then they show the Rokid Max with this weird text underneath it. How is this augmented reality? And then there's an extended diatribe in here about how, like, well, Iron Man doesn't really use AR. Iron Man uses a mixed reality headset just like the Vision Pro. And that's the correct way to do the thing with the stuff because Apple. So if you were consuming the last 11 and a half years of tech journalism, most of these commentaries that I'm pointing to and I'm highlighting are coming from mainstream reviewers and large publications. You would have had almost 12 years of people telling you that things like Google Glass and the Focals by North and X-Real glasses and Rokids and TCLs, the new Lenovo Legion, none of this stuff is ever going to be good enough. It's all, never buy any of it. Don't. Wait for Gen 3, wait for Gen 4, or you know what? It's just safer. When Apple does it, Apple will do it right. You will have had nothing to play with in this space for almost 12 years, and they're spinning up. They're spinning up again. They're putting out the commentary again. You know what you really need? You don't want to play with, you know, these reasonably priced face displays that do an amazing job of projecting out. These are my TCL Nexwear S. I'm gearing up for a video on these soon. I've got the script written. It's going to be fun. These are cost-effective ways to project out a huge screen image. Video quality is really good. 1080p at a center focus clarity that's going to almost match the Vision Pro. But these glasses are only like $400 or $500, depending on the region you might buy them in. What you really need is a $3,500 mixed reality headset that can only be powered for about 2 hours on a charge. That's how you know the real AR is here. Not this sort of XR solution that's super practical, incredibly accessible, really easy to drive, and can run for hours out in the field plugged into a phone. No. What you need is the $3,500 mixed reality headset with the soap on a rope battery. I gotta take a break. So I just spoiled like a massive part of the video that I'm putting together. That essay is gonna take me forever to put together. I hate doing long form video essays. I'll get back into the chat here in just a second. Bionics Group, rumor clicks are a thing? Dude, this is 12 years of rumor clicks with nothing to show for it. And people still keep going to this well. Like, these are prognosticators. These are the techies that really know what's up. And I love it because, like, the leakers were hardcore on Apple Glass for the iPhone 12 launch. That's when we really caught this $499 price. As part of the leak, as part of the rumor. That's where you had all of the leakers and all of the commentators then jumping on the leaker, and that was the year they were really gonna do it. And of course, the iPhone 12 launch was just 5G. 5G kills your phone battery, but this is the year that iPhone does 5G right. Nothing to show for it. There is no credibility to any of this commentary. And every single one of these pieces is designed to also diminish an actual product that you can buy today. Current AR glasses literally make me hurl, but I'm a believer thanks to the Vision Pro. I don't feel we're really leaning into our best journalistic selves when that's a part of the headline that seeks to just confirm the bias of people who are already predisposed to enjoy Apple products. from Pakistan, oof, am I alone in wanting Google Glass without the camera and mic? The focals were really close, but the ring was very questionable. The ring was not questionable. The ring was amazing. That control implementation was fantastic. I hated the thing about Google Glass always having to kind of like reach up or nod
to get UI to drop and then wiping my glasses. And especially at a time of global pandemic where we weren't exactly sure how diseases were spreading, touching my face was not something that I wanted to do. But I could wear gloves in the supermarket with a mask, and I could walk around with my Focals by North, and I could ring. That was incredible. And the thing is, you do kind of want stuff like the microphone. I've complained numerous times, like, let me pull one up here just as an example, because this is a watch I really like. Yeah, we'll do the T-Rex. This is my Amazfit T-Rex. I love this watch. It is a fantastic fitness tracker, rugged watch. It's not a smart watch. It uses an RTOS and it gets weeks of battery life. I don't keep it on my wrist as a daily driver. I would love to, but I can't do things like rich notification, rich speech to text replies. So more often than not, I'm using something like my Mobvoi just so I can push a button, talk into the watch, have it transcribe what I say, and then send that off as a message so I don't have to pull my phone out of my pocket when I'm out and about, when I'm out on the go. As soon as any RTOS watch gets speech to text, I'm there. And the reason why I locked in on that was how good the experience was on Focals by North. I would live in my Discord through the Focals. I'd see the new comment pop up, click, click, reply, just talk my reply out into the air. My glasses would transcribe them and I could see exactly what they wrote, click, send it, and I was done. It was so much less distracting than even looking down at my wrist and pushing the microphone and talking into my watch and waiting for it to transcribe, holding my arm. I lose the use of an entire arm waiting for that speech to text. I had it up at eye level and I had it through a remote control interface. And it was beautifully transcribed, and it was faster than any smartwatch of that time. So I was fine giving up the cameras, because I really don't care about the next step of consumer AR being holography. I don't care if I get turn-by-turn directions and they're painted onto the road in front of me. I liked the Focals just gave me a simple wireframe animation of a left arrow or a right arrow whenever I would need to make a turn. I'm good with that. You can lose the cameras. You can lose most of like the head tracking sensors and gyroscopes and all that stuff. Just give me a static display. But I am probably going to want microphones. I would prefer that they not be voice activated like our smartphone assistants would be. But that's where the Ring really came in handy, because it was such a simple and quick tactile. Don't need to look at it. Don't need to touch my face. Don't need to call out into the air to interact with the product. It is the best interaction that I've had for a visual system. So I totally understand why Vision Pro is trying to make hand gestures a thing, but then you have to be incredibly precise about how you activate the gestures and then incorporate that into the UI of the glasses. The Ring was so much more practical. Tactile, immediate, click, click, click. And you didn't have to look at it. You didn't have to think about your body posture. Like in the Vision Pro reveal, the model is sitting in this really awkward way on her couch so that her hands can be perfectly tracked by the Vision Pro. But you know what that means? I have to hold my hands in a place where I need to see, the Vision Pro can see it. Whereas with the Focals and the Ring, click, click, click. Didn't matter where my hands were. My hand could be in my pocket. I got one hand in my pocket and the other is hailing a taxi cab. And it just worked. No line of sight, no like specific gestures. Click to activate, navigate, 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 click to confirm. Done. Message pops up, click down, reply, click, talk out the reply, click, send. Done. It was beautiful and we had it and it was perfect. And all we needed was Focals 2 Electric Boogaloo, and then Google bought them and we never got it. We lost something so good and so many people never had a chance to try it. And it drives me crazy. It was beautiful and it was genius and it was gorgeous.
Ha 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 ha.
There's a whole conversation happening about hate watching. Michael Corcoran, I try to avoid hate watching tech videos because it technically rewards them, but I understand the temptation. Austin Evans is a reliable channel for that kind of thing. If someone is making videos that you feel like are frustrating or bothering you, like sharing them, commenting on them, thumbs downing them, watching them, all of that is just revenue. You are basically encouraging them to make more videos like that. Well, I mean, Pakistan, you just didn't forget the ring. The ring was awesome. Sorry. I should actually quote. Pakistan says, fair enough. I don't like the ring for being an extra battery powered input and something to forget. But you didn't? So, like, where you would put the glasses to charge them in that charge case, that's where you would put the ring. So it's all contained. And the charge case had its own battery backup. So the ring would last a lot longer than the glasses would. So the times that you take the ring off to put it in the case to charge it, you didn't have to charge the ring as frequently as the glasses, but they all just ended up going together. It just became a part of the morning routine. I knew I was going to go out that day, open the case, put on the glasses, put on the ring, go do my stuff, come home, I'm ready, take the glasses off, put them back in the case, put the ring in the case, close the case, and then they would top off and charge. I mean, the whole system was actually beautifully thought out. The only thing I wanted were just like some extra little controls, like on the case. Like there would be times where if I were traveling, I would have liked the opportunity to turn the case off, right? Like I don't want to worry about charging the glasses right now. I just want them to be safe in the case. And I'm trying to prolong battery life and charge them when I need to versus when I don't. I feel like a lot of battery cases fall into that trap. I have one for my Rode Wireless Go, where as soon as you plug something in, it starts charging that thing. But really what I want is a control to toggle when that charge happens. Because I'm not necessarily concerned about making sure that all of my little mini wireless mics are perfectly 100% charged all the time. You know, sometimes it's okay if that last 10%, I can just switch off. So it's things like that that I would have refined. But the actual operation and the whole package of all of that, I've never seen any company release a first generation product as well thought out, as well polished as the Focals by North. That has completely soured the experience for smartwatches today. Focals by North died years ago, and still today, I look at this as such a terrible consolation prize. This is like the worst of all worlds, the smartwatch. And it kills me how few people really got to try something that was superior. What we needed was like another generation of refinement on the projector system or going to different types of optics or some other way to do like a lens system in the glasses. Yes, there were some issues to sort out, but the actual software, integrations, control scheme, charging setup, accessories package, nothing. Nothing has been as good as the Focals by North. Simon says, if no, Juanes Morissette. There's a really great documentary. I think it was on HBO Max. It's probably been pulled. Just talking about like where she is today. And then also like the whole history of the Jagged Little Pill tour. Also, it kind of breaks your heart because what's his name? The drummer from the Foo Fighters was also her drummer, Taylor Hawks, who recently passed away. And he's a part of the documentary, and he's just so charming and vibrant, and it's so sad that we've lost him. But the Jagged Little Pill documentary is a great watch. Just like perfectly sort of time capsuling a moment in alternative rock history. And I love like some of her reactions to things too, especially like her own hindsight on looking back at that era of her career. And like, everyone said I was so angry. But only one song on that album is really, like, you know, aggressive. All the rest of the songs on that album are actually kind of sweet. You're like, yeah, hey, how did she get that reputation? So anyway, I would highly recommend checking it out. It's really a sweet watch. And especially if you grew up in that time, like I did. Going back to that, oh, the nostalgia on that is pretty hardcore. I'm trying to slide this. A lot of people are talking about individual leakers and rumorers. Taylor Hawkins, thank you. I said Taylor Hawks, didn't I? Taylor Hawkins, just incredible. And Binox Group, it makes me miss my Pebble. The Pebble was a better smartwatch than anything we've had in Wear OS or Apple Watch. It serves a different purpose. It has different technologies than your phone. It doesn't overlap as much with your phone tech. It had speech to text. It had a fluid UI. It had great interoperability with different devices. And I'll also throw a shout out. Again, almost no one got to play with one, but the Qualcomm Talk. Do I still have it over here? My watch band on the Qualcomm Talk broke. Yep, it's right over here. So unfortunately, this product is now proper dead. This is one of the dumbest watch designs in the history of a wearable, where you can't remove the band from the watch body. It's all a part of the sensors and the touch gestures and stuff. And it didn't have an adjustable strap. So what you would do is you would cut, there are these like seams, I don't even think I can show this on video. It's kind of right there. You would cut at these seams to adjust the watch to your wrist, and then no one else could wear the watch unless they had the exact same size wrist as you. But unfortunately, as this watch band has aged, the seams are now starting to split. So even if I could charge it and get the app to work with it, this had an incredible new display technology. It lasted for a week on a charge, and even though it was like low power, it also had rich notification speech to text replies. I'm telling you, as soon as any one of these fitness bands gives me speech to text, I'm done with Wear OS. I don't like how Google has managed it. I don't like how they keep putting their partners out in the cold. I don't like that they've had to collaborate only with Samsung to make it some kind of a platform. The Fitbit direction from Google is not inspiring a lot of confidence. As soon as I can get an Amazfit or a Garmin or any other one of these wearables that will let me talk at my wrist again, I'm out. I'm done. The Pebble was better. The Qualcomm Talk was better. Focals by North were better. They've all been better. And the only reason why I'm still on this watch is because of literally that one last remaining feature. And I like MobVoy hardware. So at least for Wear OS, I'm not on like 2 days of battery life with a constantly on secondary display that I can see time and date and stuff in my sphere of digital influence. I'm so frustrated. It's so sad that we've let things get this bad. Oh, I'm done with my coffee. We got about a half hour here. Does anyone want to chat like Microsoft or Pixel 8 or what? Where do we want to go next? That was our conversation about RCS. Oh, JGJ Pine Time looks pretty good too. But again, I want someone to come in, you know, like a Withings. You know, that would be so cool. I love the look of Withings. It's a mostly analog watch, but it's got that little digital ticker display circle in the middle of the face. Give me a microphone that I can talk into the watch, have it transcribe my message, and send it back out. I had something like that on LG Tone headphones. It's killing me that in this age of incredible components, coprocessors, micro SoCs with gobs of compute power, I can't just say, hey, I'm running late, I'll be there in a few minutes, can you order me a latte and send? And I have to pull my phone out of my pocket and do that interaction from there. Or if I'm driving my car, there is nothing I can do to engage in that text reply. Like, I have to call the person. Hey, I'm driving. I don't want to pick up my phone. The cops are out in force, especially at the end of the month. They've been pulling over high school students like crazy around my neighborhood. Hey, I'll be running a little bit late. Can you grab me a latte? Like, that... Oh, that's so dumb. Technology has regressed so much. And all of the massive tech journalists and tech reviewers are like, well, I don't know. Phones got real boring. Smartphone is basically dead. We're just waiting for something to take over for the smartphone. And like, we could have had it 10 years ago. We could have. But you were so short-sighted, you said, hey, don't use Google Glass. That makes you a glass hole. Instead, wait for Apple to make glasses. And 12 years later, you will have nothing. Oh no, the focals by North are a little heavy. Better wait for Gen 3. You know, if you don't buy products from companies, they'll just keep making stuff until eventually they get it right. Screw you. Anyone who was out there with that kind of short-sighted commentary. We have nothing in that space now because of people like that. I am actively pointing to the tech contributors, journalists, and reviewers who engage in that kind of long-term speculation on tech. They are actively harming our hobby. Oh, it's not my fault that these companies left the market. You know, it's not your fault, but you helped. You contributed. You were not solely responsible for these brands failing in the market, but you kind of nudged them along. So I mean, just own it. That's what you do. You only front for what's popular. You only front for what's already selling incredibly well, and that's your role. But don't pretend that you're some kind of reviewer or educator or even any kind of futurist, because that's not what a futurist does. A futurist looks at the future of this technology and actively tries to look at ways that we can engage in the conversation to make that better for everybody and bring more people into it and address things like accessibility. So folks want to talk about the Pixel 8. From Mini-Me, we want to talk about 7 years of OS updates on the Pixel 8. Oh no, did I not bring it back in with me? Oh, I think I left it in my bedroom because I was having so much fun using it. Oh, I did. I know I've got another one in here somewhere. Okay, so I'm putting together a video. I'm going to spoil part of this video too. I'm putting together another video just looking back and how ludicrous it is that we keep selling consumers on more compute power or more performance, and then we never really live up to the demands of the software that could take advantage of more compute power. So like 8 Gen 2s and A17 Pros, incredibly high performance SoCs and chips and stuff like that. Quick tangent. Several years ago, I made a video looking back at a 4-year-old mid-ranger. When did I make that video? 4 year. No, I'm not gonna find it there. Let's say Nova. Will that show up? No. I can't remember when I made the video, but it was a couple years back. At the time, that mid-ranger was a 4-year-old phone. It was a Huawei Nova. Snapdragon, I think 625. Pretty modest, you know, very sort of straightforward specs. It was a little expensive for kind of a mid-ranger phone when it first launched, but the Nova kind of helped. The Nova came out the year after Huawei's Nexus, so the Nexus 6P, and the Nova was rumored to have been the follow-up Nexus device, and that's where Google decided to pull the plug on the Nexus and instead went to the Pixel. They wanted more control in-house. So instead of making a Nexus device from another company, they just wanted a Google badge on that company, on that product. And Huawei wanted their label on the phone. Grossly oversimplifying years ago, but my brain just clicked. So 4 years after the launch of that Nova, I looked back and I said, like, you know what? This is still a wonderfully high-performance mid-ranger phone today. 4 years later, you would not be hurting for camera performance. It's a 4K video camera. You get good stills out of it. It lacked image stabilization, but if you'd been comfortable shooting with it, it still would have been great. The UI was still fluid. The performance was still great. The thing that would have killed you is the battery. After 4 years of daily driver use, your battery would have tanked. I had a Nova in relatively fresh condition because I was not using it as a daily driver phone. In fact, I could probably still dig up. I think I've got it in a box right next to my bookshelf there. I could probably pull it up, and that Nova would still be a great phone today. Sorry, I know this is going somewhere. I get really rambly. I am going to go back to a phone from 2019. Again, roughly 4 years ago, and look at what does that look like today? What have we really gotten for all of these massive performance promises? Do we really accomplish work faster or better? What have we given up in terms of accessories, and headphone jacks and SD card expansion and video output through the USB-C and desktop modes. And I'm kind of debating which phone I'm going to use, but I was a classic LG stan, so it's probably going to be a V50. But I also have my G8 here too. So this is a phone, this is a phone from 2019. In the year 2023, it's kind of a better phone. It's kind of a better pocket computer than what we sell today, even though it's less powerful and the camera sensors aren't as good as what we sell today. It doesn't mean that we got better phones out of any of this. So, sorry, short story, incredibly long. What I feel we were lacking, if you had a phone from 2019 at the peak of LTE, your phone is probably hurting today, but it's not because of processing power, and it's not because the software just got so intense that your phones can't handle it anymore. It's probably that your battery is not supplying enough power to really drive the phone the way that it should. And it's probably that, you know, those internal components do degrade over time. You run electricity through circuits, and eventually components will start to wear out. But like the actual promise of that phone, with a little bit of care and a little bit of maintenance and maybe something like a battery replacement at around 3 or 4 years, you'd still be doing great. And I bet you people with Galaxy S10s and LG G8s, LG V50s, you know, devices like that, Snapdragon 855s, probably updated to at least Android 12. My LG G8 and my V50 are both running Android 12. If you could just keep getting some basic bug fixes, security patches, that kind of support, I feel like those could be 10-year phones. I think a Galaxy S10 could easily go 10 years with some battery care. So when I see something like Google getting out and saying, if they do announce this, I'll be very positive on this, we are going to give you 7 years of software support. I don't care if it's 7 operating system updates. If it's just 7 years of security patches, that is huge. Because you're even if the Pixel 8 is the least powerful premium tier phone of 2023, it is going to be an order of magnitude gross overkill for the daily driver needs of most people using smartphones. It's going to be a couple nerds like me who are like, well, it doesn't render video quite as fast as I'd like it to. Or, oh, I wish it could scrub this podcast just a little bit quicker. Actually, you know, I take that back. It'll probably lose the podcast race, but I'm hoping that Google will still maintain their advantage in video and photo editing, because right now the Pixel is still the fastest phone at editing and rendering 4K video. It's not an iPhone, it's the Pixel. It's not a Galaxy. It's the Pixel. The least powerful premium tier phone, according to N22, is the fastest at rendering 4K video. I bet you the Pixel 8 will probably still hang in that sphere, even with the architectural differences that we're seeing in their SoC design. But 7 years. 7 years of software support. Now what we need to do, as techies, as responsible tech neighbors, tech citizens, is reach out to family and friends and say, you probably don't need a new phone. You probably just need a battery replacement. You've got an iPhone 10? It's still probably the phone that's going to get all your stuff done. Go get a new battery. Oh, but that's like $100 now. But a new iPhone is like $900. Yeah, but I can subsidize that over 3 years with my carrier. You're going to be paying for a $900 phone for 3 years. Just go get a new battery. Just go do it. Go to the Genius Bar. They'll hem and they'll haw. I don't know that we can support it. Oh, that might be kind of expensive. Let's just use a new battery.
The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by Me Audio.
So here's the deal. If you've ever seen me in a live stream or in an interview or some other kind of video, you've probably seen me wearing some fancy earbuds. For the last couple years, my work buds have been almost exclusively from Me Audio. Excellent drivers, fantastic accessories, and both my wife and I had our ears scanned by the folks at Me Audio for custom molded ear tips. Super comfy. The MX line of Pro in-ear monitors is one of the easiest lineups to understand, starting at $60 and built around actual professional use. Detailed sound and durable construction, but also with some fun options like customizable faceplates. Even if you're not working on stage or in studio, Pro solutions like these are fantastic audio options, and they don't need to break the bank. And the company also supports a lineup of consumer gear with options for true wireless and noise-canceling Bluetooth earbuds, adapters for TVs to stream your audio to nicer headphones, and headsets for kids to help control the volume on fresh, developing ears. I can't stress that last one enough. We have to start kids out with healthier listening habits. It's a great combo, high-quality audio gear built by a team of folks with recording-grade use in mind, but at consumer-friendly prices. But of course, I can do you one better. If you shop the kit at meaudio.com and use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, you can save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. Once again, meaudio.com, meaudio.com. Shop some fun kit, promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout, 10% off. Keep your ears and your wallet happy at the same time. I want to thank the folks at Me Audio for hooking up the promo code. Now, let's get on with the show.
Barry Johnson, smartphones are dead. Tech is boring. There was another editorial. The smartphone is dead. Let me see if I can find it. I think I can literally search for the smartphone is dead. Let's see. Yep. Tech Advisor immediately pops up. Why the smartphone as we know it is dead. Macworld, why the end of the smartphone is imminent. From 2021. 2 years later, it's like, well, probably not. Actually, in that year that you put out that article of why the end of the smartphone is imminent was like the highest selling year for smartphones in the history of smartphones. That's so funny. Steve Pogue, I'm personally looking into the TicWatch E3 because I want something better than this $50 watch I currently have. The E3 is pretty solid, but if you can shop one of the Pros on sale, the TicWatch Pro's dual screen is phenomenal. Hashtag this podcast not sponsored by Mobvoi. That makes a profound difference in how I use my watch. You have a screen that is always on and is always giving you some kind of relevant information and can also be customized. Like at any time, I can just flip this dial and like maybe I want a compass view. And then my watch just becomes a passive screen compass and I can navigate around me like an old school Boy Scout. The E3 is good, but it's going to be yet another one of those charge it every day kinds of watches. And I don't feel like there's anything special on the E3 that you couldn't get from like Fossil also. But yeah. The E3 is good. I'm not trying to talk you out of getting the E3. It's just, if you can, I really feel the experience improves when you can manage 2 to 3 days of active use battery life of fitness tracking and sleep tracking and all day heart rate monitoring. It even gives you some basic tools for alerts on like, heart health and stress and stuff like that. I feel like your money goes a little bit further, even though it is a more expensive watch. Ghostar Scream, we don't know because this isn't official. We're talking about rumors and we're talking about leaks, but let me pull up Pixel 8, 7 years of. So right now we're just talking about rumors. Like The Verge is one of the top. Let me see. So like Android Authority, I feel like this is a slightly more reasonable headline. Android Authority says, full Pixel 8 specs leak suggests a whopping 7 years of updates. But let me scroll down. Cameras, connectivity, other sensors, dimensions, colors. The most notable detail is the fact that the phones will get up to 7 years of software updates. The leaker clarified that this doesn't necessarily mean 7 years of OS updates, likely referring to security updates. So, like what I was saying, though, here's the thing that I would actually kind of like to see is maybe only 3 to 4 years of operating system updates, but then give me 7 years of bug fixes and security patches. That to me is so much more valuable than always getting the new OS number. Because one of the things that I've also seen is like, I just held up, this is the LG G8 from 2019. It ended up leaving the OS update cycle on Android 12. Not Android 12L, that fixed a whole bunch of issues, Android 12. So this is actually not the best iteration of the G8. I kind of liked the G8 better on Android 11. We don't, you know, you don't always get the better experience when you sort of force longer and longer and longer operating system updates on older and older and older hardware. Again, this a part of this could be the battery health. I have not taken the time to fully scrub this phone. I updated in place from Android 11. I didn't update as a fresh, clean install of Android 12. I could probably fix some of those issues if I took the time to do that. But I also kind of feel like I shouldn't have to. Especially on a phone that's older than that. So I kind of feel like they're going to keep making changes. So one of the reasons why I point to this is like the performance on Android 11 was better because we weren't forced into the full lockdown of scoped storage. Well, now a bunch of Android apps are using scoped storage regardless if you're on Android 13, 12, or 11. But on Android 11, the performance was way better on things like photo editing because we didn't deal with this stupid bucket storage situation that Google forced on us. It's actually taken us several years to match the performance of the Snapdragon 855 getting around scoped storage. We're only just kind of now realizing some of those performance benefits of high-end, excessively powerful SoCs because of the way that Google has fractured their security on these devices. I shouldn't say that. Technically, scoped storage is supposed to be safer, but it's solving a problem that I don't think is really the significant threat to consumers that they're trying to make it sound like. Just a more reasonable policy on how apps can interact with the system would probably have done us better than this really ham-fisted approach to locking apps into these little individual buckets. But I digress. Actually, like I point this out, maybe the G8 would be running a little bit better on Android 13 just for some of the improvements coming to Android 13, but we can't predict over a 4 to 6 year period, what are the major changes that are going to come to an operating system and how is that going to impact the code that was written specifically for that generation of hardware. It gets really messy when we look at that kind of expanded long-term conversation. So I actually feel like it's probably better to kind of scale some of that back. Look at a 7 year window and say, hey, when we get to the end of this 7 year window, we can still be bringing new Android features to this phone. Things like location tracker, right? That wasn't just rolled out to brand new phones with pre-installed Android 13. That was extended back to a couple generations of older devices too. So now your phone can look at all these like health and safety and security things and you can say, okay, well, scan around me and I can look and someone stuck an AirTag to my car and now I know I've got an enemy out there. PI is trying to look into my business. But that wasn't locked to one OS version. That was added. Same thing with Nearby Share. When we started getting Nearby Share, it went all the way back to like Android 7 or Android 6. I forget exactly. So that's a good thing. We can still extend years of feature support and software support and security support and bug fixes and patches. That is going to make your device run so much better than if you say, well, I need to have the bigger Android OS number. It's likely you will not end up with the better phone if you force the bigger Android OS number. So I kind of hope Google comes out here and says, hey, we really think this is the window where it's acceptable, where we can predict and we have control over the SoC. And we can say, you know, we've got a timeline on Android 15 and Android 16 and Android 17. And those three talking back to this older SoC that we're making today, now we can say, okay, well, moving forward, we've got to look at the software and the products and the initiatives that are going to change as new hardware changes for us. And that means that you don't get the better experience on this older phone, but we can still work to support it, clean it up, make it faster, make it better, and bring new features to the phone. And a 7-year window makes a lot of sense for that. So I really hope that that's true. Aditya Nolt, do you already have the Pixel 8? Blink in a 7-8 rhythm for yes, Blink in a 3-4 waltz for no. The blinking is what was going to kind of mess me up. I don't have a Pixel 8. I hope the Team Pixel people are going to be playing with them. I've enjoyed the Pixel Fold, and I still have not finished my longer term thoughts on using their folding tablet. But you know, even if they don't send me one, that's one where I'll probably trade in a phone or two. The Pixel 8 is looking really interesting, and I'm hoping that some of these rumors actually come to pass, like the new larger image sensor. I'm really hoping we're seeing not only USB 3.2, but that we see the full support for things like video output for screen mirroring from the Pixel 8. I'm hoping that that's what we're going to see. So from Android Authority, this leak right here, Pixel 8 Pro, 6.7-inch quad HD plus LTPO screen from 1 Hz to 120 Hz refresh, 2400 peak maximum brightness with a Google Tensor G3, 12 gigs of RAM, up to a terabyte of storage in the United States. Maybe looking at 512 gig models globally, 5,050 milliamp hour battery, up to 30 watt fast charging. That's not fast. That is very slow charging in this day and age. And again, they're saying a series of cameras here, a 50 megapixel main wide camera, a 64 megapixel ultra wide, and a 48 megapixel telephoto. I really wish that they would look at matching some of these specs more, but the thing that's going to kill me, if Google puts out those numbers and they don't allow you to take full resolution images from those sensors, I feel that puts Google in a position where they could have to face some kind of class action or Truth in Advertising lawsuit. You don't have a 50 megapixel camera on your phone. You have a 12 megapixel camera with each big pixel cut into smaller subpixels and an inordinate amount of remosaicing software has to happen to simulate having a 50 megapixel image come off of that sensor. If Google advertises 50 megapixels, I just said Google again, and my Pixel Fold is super aggressive at firing up whenever it hears the G word. If you advertise 50 MP, you have to give me a camera mode that gives me 50 MP. It really bothers me that they advertise 50 MP and then you don't get to use that. Let's stop pretending that quad bare sensors are the native resolution. The native resolution of a quad bare sensor is the binned resolution. And when you shoot a standard RAW file, you get a 12 megapixel image, not a 50 megapixel image. I think the only quad bare phone that delivered, this might not be the only, actually Huawei might have done this too, but the only one that I've used that delivered the actual native resolution of the sensor, and it was a quad bare, it was a 48 megapixel camera, was the Honor V20. So I've got it right over there. It's the red chevroned reflective glass back Honor V20. So when you shot RAW on that, you would get these like 96 megabyte RAW files. They were huge. But you would actually get the 48 megapixels from the sensor. And those RAW files could be kind of weird. because you have this weird block of pixels that you're kind of editing around. Sorry, I'm going way off here. Yeah, I don't believe, and I really wouldn't expect, and I don't think you'll get the best experience if it's 7 years of operating system updates. I really think it's going to be something more like 4 years OS, 7 years of security patches and bug fixes and stuff like that. Yeah, so I mean, Steve Snorkel, the phone that I started doing some of my re-benchmarking on was the LG V50. That's why I was saying it's like, oh, it's over there in my bedroom. And I had two. I had the Sprint model and I had the International model with the dual display. So the International version is in my bedroom right now. But the Galaxy S10, I don't like Samsung. It is so much better of a pocket computer phone experience in total than most of our premium tier devices today. I'm popping a SIM card in my S10e and it takes me back in time, and I'm still perfectly capable of doing all of my daily driver communication needs, and I can plug it into another display and work off of DeX, and I've got a headphone jack, and I can add a ton of storage to it after the fact. And the cameras are pretty good. They're not my favorite. I think I liked LG's processing and camera stack better than I liked Samsung's, but they're good. All of that. And you didn't have to mess with any of the overheating that 888s or 8 Gen 1s had. I mean, the S10 was a much better phone than the S21 or the S22. For what you really care about as a high-performance premium phone user, much better. Much better. Like, no contest. Ooh, go Starscream. That could be kind of fun. Did you hear that Xiaomi is going to match the Galaxies with updates longevity? I feel like this is just going to be kind of a larger part of the conversation in general. And I want to see it. I really hope to see it. Like, I've got my Xiaomi 13, and I've got my Xiaomi 13 Ultra. These phones are great. I love them. It does make me a little anxious to say, like, okay, if you want to ride the Xiaomi amazing camera train, you're probably going to get like 2 years of real targeted operating system and software support. And then if you get some other patches later on, it's just kind of gravy. The same thing, like the company that I also feel really needs to take this conversation more seriously is Sony. A bigger part of their messaging and their brand campaign talking about what their support is going to look like and what their customers' expectations should be. So if Google gets out there and leads a part of this and that makes it a part of this is why you buy a premium tier phone, that's better. And now we need to start extending that conversation out to mid-rangers, because there is no reason why someone on a Snapdragon 765 shouldn't still be crushing it today. That chip was so good. Again, we're talking about a mid-ranger phone from like 2020-ish. And that 765 is just fantastic. It is a great balance of power usage off the battery and performance from the SoC. It's good for gaming. It can handle video output. It can be used as a desktop mode kind of device. It can support 4K video recording with, you know, a software cropped image stabilization. The Pixel 5 was solid. The LG Velvet, the LG Wing, all of these phones were great phones. There's no reason why a 765 shouldn't still be performing wonderfully today. Oh, and it also came, like, you could get models that were just LTE or had good support for sort of the early emerging 5G networks. It was great. That to me, like, a Pixel 5a 5G is a better daily driver phone than I think anything that's currently being sold right now. I think more consumers would enjoy the experience of a Pixel 5a 5G and the incredible battery life on that phone over a Pixel 7a. Sorry, I'm way behind on the chat here, and we should probably start wrapping this up while I still have a little bit of voice left. Let me drink some more water here. Michael Corcoran. It's going to be real funny when Samsung fans now say, who cares about 7 years of updates? Duration of updates isn't important. And they're going to do a complete about face. Remember, it was always a huge selling point. Well, the Galaxy is going to give you 5 years, but you should flip your phone after 1 year for the best trade-in deals. Always got to move those goalposts around, right? You always just got to make sure that no matter where you go, Samsung can punt it in easily. It's pretty hilarious. Yeah, Michael Peppertech, this is kind of tricky. The Pixel Fold has made me want to grab a Pixel 8. Smartwatch options are what keep me from giving up iPhone as my main device. I need the health integration with my doctor, and Apple Watch is it so far. And that's another thing, is we need to talk about, we've got an entire medical tech industry that, and we want it to be this way. I'm not advocating against this. But it is a troubling concern when we look at the requirements of HIPAA against the practical landscape of consumer electronics. And it takes a long time to certify a product for a higher tier of medical use. And the Apple Watch is still a consumer-facing smartwatch, but Apple has taken some time and worked with the FDA to improve features on that watch so that it can be used in these kinds of medical conversations like Michael Peppertech is having with his doctor. At the same time, I don't believe Michael Peppertech should be allowed to buy an Apple Watch so long as the Apple Watch is using stolen IP. But that's an earlier part of our podcast. That's a different part of this conversation. It takes a long time to certify not just the wearable, but also the host computer that interacts with that wearable. So, for example, there are some medical issues that I'm dealing with, and I'm looking through and I'm seeing there are some software services that can help, but so far, like, I'm not going to be able to use any of my import phones to talk to that service. It's usually a select number of Samsungs. It's not even like the full portfolio. It's not Galaxy phones are approved. It's like a Galaxy S20, the Galaxy S22 Ultra. I mean, it is that granular that certain phones have been approved for some of these kinds of conversations. I can't use a Sony to use this product or to use this service. I have to use a Samsung. And it's not always a guarantee that a Pixel will be on that list. So the entire part of this industry, the entire conversation on that, we do need to address. What is the process? How much money is involved? What are the certifications? And how do we get other manufacturers up to speed to better enforce this type of medical compliance? And then, are we concerned about medical compliance on these platforms when they're also advertising based? So your iPhone is tracking all your data and putting it into a bucket and selling that off to advertisers, just like Google is now. One of the highest growth areas for Apple is in services. And a lot of those services are basically just ad platforms at this point. They kicked out Google. They kicked out Facebook. They really made it difficult for any other company to engage in that kind of targeted behavior-based advertising so they could sell it themselves. It wasn't privacy or to make your product better. It was to make Apple more money at the expense of Facebook's bottom line. And that should be anti-competitive, but I digress. but on top of that is, like, it makes me concerned also leveraging these platforms and these services and these products to then keep a daily accounting of my healthcare needs. And I'm starting to feel like the tinfoil hat guy. Like, if every aspect of my device is entwined with this type of behavior tracking for marketing and advertising, and you can't certify my phone when I'm using a secure ROM. So I can take this Galaxy S20 that you've approved, but if I scrub that ROM and I put on, like, Lineage or Graphene or something like that, well, now I can't use your service because that's not really what you approved. You did not approve a security, hardened, privacy-focused ROM on my device. You approved a Galaxy S20 with One UI. So now my phone doesn't show up properly. That's the next part of all of this that we need to kind of figure out. And that's a really, I don't even have the beginnings of a solution for that. That is a years-long examination of the consumer electronics industry and then working with the medical tech industry and regulators to start coming up with a solution. And the beginning solutions that we come up with are going to suck. Like, they're going to be bad. So we should probably, like I said, we should probably start wrapping this up. We're going to get some news soon. Pixel 8 is right around the corner. And I feel like we're probably in good shape for reasonable prices on what will be high performance premium tier phones. I saw one saying like the starter price on the Google 8, the Pixel 8 Pro is going to be like $899. And I think that's appropriate. I think we're in the right ballpark to put a Pixel 8 Pro against an iPhone 15 Plus. The Pixel 8 Pro is going to be the better phone than an iPhone 15 Plus. And so dollar to dollar, I feel like that is a good matchup. And especially if Google is committing to longer term software, if their hardware is nearly competitive with an iPhone 15 Pro, but you're getting it for the price of an iPhone 15 Plus, then I think we're in really good shape. Like, I'm positive on what Google's going to put out. And I'm really looking forward to this exchange because I also feel like it's going to be a different conversation. They're going to lose the benchmarking game. Your synthetic AnTuTu scores are going to be lower. And I don't know that I could care any less. But what we need to see are improvements to SoC thermal throttling. And we definitely need to see radio improvements because Samsung modems have been pretty bad. So if Samsung can kind of spruce up that modem, that also puts us in better position to see what the next generation of Galaxies are going to look like. So the Galaxy SoCs for 2024, we're going to get kind of a sneak peek here looking at the Pixel 8 Pro. Michael Corcoran, yeah, my LG Wing is still getting its security patches with the 765, but I have to imagine that's going to come to an end. That's coming to an end any day now. Probably December would be 3 years officially. Yeah, it's been good. I mean, again, I went and picked up my LG V50 and it loaded up a new OS update because I just have not fired it up in a while. And it's pretty great. It's pretty great. Oh, Ghost Starscream, I'm trying to de-ecosystemalization my tech. It feels good. It feels good when you've got different parts and pieces and they are working together, but you're like not locked into any one unique platform. I highly recommend it. It takes a little bit more work on your part, but it's pretty great. Oh, you know, we didn't even like touch on Surface. Muppinish, the Surface Duo security update's going to be gone too. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's dead. Microsoft, I can't spend another 20 minutes talking about that. I might just cut it from the title of this podcast. But I was very disappointed in the pricing on the different tiers for Surfaces. We talked about it, like I said, we talked about it on Best of Our Week, so you can catch me kind of digging into it live with TK. But the actual products look pretty good. I like the refresh to the Surface Studio. I think it's great that we're seeing 12th gen on a Surface Laptop Go 3, but the pricing for their upgrades makes no sense at all. And it's really frustrating when it's something like RAM on the Surface Laptop Go 3. Because I don't believe you can upgrade the RAM on the Surface Laptop Go 3. And paying for just 8 gigabytes of RAM is like a $150 or $200. Right now on the sales prices, I want to say it's close to a $180 difference to get 8 gigabytes of RAM. And then the Surface Studio is also ludicrously priced when you go from a 1 terabyte Surface Studio to a 2 terabyte Surface Studio is something like a $400 difference. There is no 2 terabyte NVMe SSD that is $400 different in price going from 1 terabyte to 2 terabytes. So that makes no sense at all. It makes zero sense that those prices are reflective of the actual demands of the industry, especially at a time where SSD prices are probably at their lowest for the year. So it's pretty rough. Yeah, I'm really frustrated. And Muppin is saying, you know, our dreams of other Surface devices are pretty much gone because Panos Panay has left and he's going over to Amazon. It really seems like Amazon just rolled a dump truck of money up to his porch and said, hey, what if you just designed a whole bunch of crazy hardware for us instead? And Panos was like, cool, because it seems like Microsoft is cutting their investment in the Surface team, which makes me really sad. I feel like Microsoft needs to understand their role in driving the future conversations about Windows as a service and putting the hardware out there that really facilitates that conversation. I'll have to save that for, I think, a separate editorial video, because I'm a huge fan. But then also, you know, you start playing with some of the things that they've inspired, and I've got like my little Robo and Kala. You know, like, here's a little Windows on ARM tablet, and you're like, am I going to get Microsoft delivering a next-gen version of this idea, or now do I need to seek out Lenovo's and Dell's and HP's and boutique manufacturers like Robo and Kala? Will a Xiaomi give me the next flavor of Windows on ARM that I've been looking for? All right, last drink of water, and then we gotta bounce out here, because I'm quickly losing my ability to talk. All right, well, folks, thanks for cruising along with me. This was like a really fun pajama podcast and going off on some tangents, and I really appreciate folks hanging with those kinds of conversations. Next week is also going to be a little bit weird. I'm not sure if I'm going to be exactly back on my schedule next week, just for some stuff that I've got coming up, but there will be a show next Monday. It might end up being like my pajama podcast for October might be the first week of October, not the last week of October. We're getting into Techtober, and I have so many projects on my plate that I'm still finishing up stuff from the summer. It's been so hard just getting all the pieces in place to really kind of get the coverage out there that I want. I've got a mini PC video that's coming up. I've got some coverage on these TCL glasses coming up. And as soon as I'm like halfway through fixing one of those videos, something else comes up and it kind of lands on my plate. So I definitely appreciate the patience, because I know last week I didn't even bother doing housekeeping. I did not get a lot of content out last week. And I've got some really big stuff coming up this week too. So all I can say is stay tuned. I've got so many things that I can tease, and then I've got stuff on my desk here that I cannot show you because of some of the agreements that I've agreed to for like embargoes and stuff, but I think you'll like them. I think you'll think they're really fun. So folks, I want you all to have a great week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here next week for another rambling conversation, probably very fluid and hopefully led by the chat, because that's the best part of all of these. And it's really kind of what gets me started up for my tech week ahead. So I hope you all enjoy them too. Always appreciate the support on Replay Crew, folks who are reviewing podcasts on your favorite podcast catchers or sharing podcasts on your favorite social media platforms. It means the world to me. And huge shout outs to JMan150, Fat Produce, and Muppinish for directly supporting through those gift subs on the Twitch. So folks, be well, take care of yourself so you can continue taking care of others. Stay tuned for an entire week of exciting tech rumors and speculation as we get into Techtober, and I will catch you back here next week. I love you all. Take care.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, And I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.